Good morning. Today is Thursday, January the 18th. Joining us this morning is Mr. Van Vleck from Eureka City Schools. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Are we having fun?
Absolutely. It's always fun.
Why?
Well, I could say lots of reasons why we're having fun, right? We're halfway through the school year.
That's always fun.
Yes.
Yeah, it's amazing to me how traffic patterns change so significantly on a day off of school from a school day.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just like night and day, or like wherever your town is, all of a sudden nothing's going on this time of the year, because it's not the tourists backfilling. There's just nobody out.
So you want the really bad news, though?
The really bad news. We got more parents and more driving?
No. Well, more driving. We are getting in the season when our 16-year-olds are starting to get their driver's licenses. So our sophomores right now, starting in about December, January, is when they start transferring in, getting their driver's license. So slowly they'll pick up. And my daughter will be one of those drivers this year.
And she is confined to what retail trading zone?
Yep.
Crescent City can breathe very deeply and easily.
Yeah, I think you'll be fine. I think you'll be fine in Crescent City. I don't think too many worries there. But, you know, it's interesting as you get around, and this is a real story, as you're around the high school there, lots of new drivers starting to come out this time of year. And so just be cautious about that.
Everybody.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's right. We haven't had many collisions at Booner and Jay this year.
Oh, did you just say that out loud?
Well, I mean, you know, it's like every other week you see glass, and it doesn't matter what time of the year.
Right.
You know, there's stuff just on the roadway there. I don't know. I know the old historical, but of why you put in a stoplight or a signal light, and it has to do with mortality rates,
right?
Not collisions.
Well, I'll tell you.
So if you have a whole bunch of fender benders,
right,
it's never going to register. Okay. Is there any opportunity for the school district to partner with the city and put a light on that intersection? Because it just seems consistently that there are cars up on Valentini's corner and a couple of other corners, and people either shooting through the intersection, not seeing the intersection, which I still don't understand why people don't see a stoplight on as they're crossing Booner. But it happens. We had one blow past us a couple nights ago. What just happened?
Well, it's amazing. My office overlooks J Street right there at the corner of Humboldt, and people blew through the Humboldt stop sign. There's something about J Street right there that they just drive quickly down it and miss a lot of stop signs. And so we did actually partner with the city right there at the corner of Humboldt and Jay and put in the flashing stop signs. So what we did and how we partnered was the district paid for the stop signs. Unbelievably expensive for a flashing stop sign. But we paid for the stop signs, the city installed them, and then the city is going to maintain those. However, anytime you get into, that's just a stop sign. There's already a stop sign there, so there was no study that needed to be done to put in a flashing stop sign or anything like that. But anytime you get into anything that alters an intersection, like for instance, when we put in a parking lot, we have to do a traffic study. And those traffic studies really get away from what sounds reasonable to us, and it goes to a traffic engineer, and they do the study, and just like you say, they study accidents and other types of things like that and the traffic flow, and they make that determination. So we really don't get a say in that.
So even a parking lot will trigger?
Yes.
Just because there's so many cars, and then certain times of the day, the traffic patterns change?
Right. So, for instance, when the new gym goes in, we will, and the old gym gets baited and demolished, that'll be a new parking lot back there behind where the existing gym is now, and there'll have to be a traffic study completed on how that will impact the traffic there.
Even though it's just going across the street?
Correct.
And it's still on the campus?
That is correct. Because you have to look at the in and out of, you know, the entry and exit to the parking lot.
That doesn't change, though.
Well, it will, because K Street right there will, where it goes right in front of the gym, will no longer be existent. K Street will end. That's actually on district property right now.
Right. So where's the access point?
The access point will be off of J, and also, was it Trinity right there, I believe it is?
Okay. So you won't be able to shoot K out to head south.
Right.
You'll have to go and tie into J Street.
Correct.
Correct. So you got a driveway then instead of a street.
That's correct. Yep.
So to speak.
Yep. And it'll be a big driveway, because that'll be our new bus drop-off location and everything. So
Sure, yeah, you're going to have the loopy there. Yeah,
that's correct. And so,
what does it take? It doesn't take anything for the flashy sign?
Money.
So right. What would it, for the two stoplight or stop signs that are at Booner and Jay, how much would that cost?
Oh, boy, you're going to tax my memory a little bit.
But
my recollection, those two flashing stop signs were a little over $5,000. Was my
okay, so that would be it's doable.
Oh,
so
it's absolutely doable. Yep, it is.
And it's a whole lot less than $250,000 for a signal light.
Correct. And I think I remember talking at some point about that, and there's some issue with that light being so close to the I Street light, too. With backing up in there, I don't remember exactly what it was, because I think Jay and I Street are close. I know enough to be dangerous.
Okay, but it's a ballpark thing anyway.
Yes,
but
yes.
It's not an engineering study to do that. It's just more of a determination that makes.
That's
sense.
My understanding. Yeah, because all you're doing when you're putting a flashing stop sign up is drawing attention to the existing control in the intersection.
Now at Del Norte and Jay, do you have any issues there?
We do sometimes, but not like we did at Humboldt and Jay. So, but sometimes there are some issues. But people, I think what it is when you're going down Jay Street, the stop signs are so sporadic as you go down through there. You come off of...
yeah, it's a secondary instead of a primary.
Right. So 6th and 7th Street, and then you shoot all the way down to 14th Street, and there's a stop sign. Then you shoot all the way down, and not until Del Norte, there's a stop sign. Then you go down, and Humboldt, there's a stop sign, and then you get to Booner. So,
a residual of the old cable car line. KIS, News and Information Times, 819.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 824. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck. Fred, the inter-district transfer that we talked about last month, has there been resolution on that? Has there been agreement on that? Has it been kind of kicked down the road a little bit? Because I know that, at least from a parent's perspective, it gave flexibility, or provides flexibility so that if I'm working somewhere next to a school, I don't have to drop my kid off hither and yon or maybe way out. It's something that is easier for the family. Okay, I think that's probably the roots of this whole thing, isn't it?
No, I don't think so, actually. I think the roots of the whole thing are more on parents' choice in thinking which school would be a better fit for their children, more so than convenience of driving around.
Okay. Yeah, and then that goes back into the 80s and 90s when schools started to specialize. I'll use Arcata as an example at the time. One was an environmental thing, one was the arts focus, and the other, I think, was a science focus. Okay, well, if we're going to focus on things and the kid has interest in certain areas, wouldn't it make sense to kind of plug him into the school that was emphasizing the area of their interest?
Sure, it absolutely could. Depends, and that's the whole magnet school concept, and there's a
pre-STEM. I beat you to it.
Yes. Well, now STEAM, so get the arts in there. Yes.
All right.
But, it really floats around that, and you started off, is there a resolution to that? And, yes, there's a tentative resolution countywide right now, and the reason I say tentative is because all the boards of the 31 school districts around the county need to approve it before it becomes a countywide agreement. And it's been tasked to the superintendents to take it to their boards this month. Eureka City Schools, in fact, approved the agreement at our meeting last week. And that's conditional upon the other school districts in the county. And all indications are that the school districts in the county are going to approve it. And there's an agreement amongst the superintendents on what that's going to look like. And some of the main things that are different in there, first off, there is an opportunity still for complete open enrollment. But there's a little catch there. And what the little catch is
what is it? What is open enrollment? Choose your school?
You choose your school. Yep. Okay. And it's if you choose to go to a different school district, it will be signed with the little caveat or the catch that I was talking about. And that catch is you have to do it during that open enrollment window. And the new open enrollment window is December 1st to February 1st. And what that does is it allows school districts to plan for the students that are going to be coming to them and make sure that they staff appropriately. Because we have a real crucial deadline of March 15th where we have to give notification to our teachers or certificated staff on whether or not we plan on using them in the following year as a teacher or a counselor or whatever the position might be. And so that February 1st allows us to gear up for what we're going to look like for the following year.
Yeah, so if you're ramping up, you also don't want to be caught with no teachers.
Correct. And so there's some exceptions to that. Like, for instance, if you're new to the community, you moved to the community in May, obviously you couldn't hit that window. So you get an opportunity to do that at a different time than that enrollment window. Or if you have some sort of crisis in your family that created the inability for you to hit that window, you can still do that. But if you just, I didn't feel like doing it or
the majority, the majority would be. Right. Process during that window.
That's correct. And so that's the main thing that's a little bit different in there now. But the opportunity for parents to move their students is still there. Another thing that's in there is an enrollment. Basically, if you want to leave a school district and go to another school district, so your district of residence and go to a different district of attendance, you have to meet with the home school district. Whether that be a phone call with the principal or going to an open house night, which we have open house nights going on now. We put those in conjunction with the open enrollment period and learn about that school that you should be attending before your agreement is signed to go off to a different school district. So at least then you have the information about what's in your home school district before you go off to another school district. And so that's a new piece that has to be done if you're doing a new inter-district transfer. So if you're, say, attending Cutton as a third grader and you want to attend Cutton next year as a fourth grader, you don't have to do that. You're already at Cutton. There's no reason for that. Or if you have a sibling that's in third grade in Cutton and you want a new kindergartner to go to Cutton, you don't have to do that either, because obviously we want to allow families to stay together.
Are you hearing anything about either schools closing, melding, changing, that kind of stuff, significant changes?
No, I don't know of any school districts right now that are talking about unifying in the county right now. Personally, I think that's something that would be an efficiency model for the county, is for more school districts to be unified. It's not big on my agenda to push that, however, right now. The only way I really see that happening in the future is if the state incentivizes that happening. And how they incentivize that happening is through giving some sort of increased revenue on enrollment for districts to merge together. Or it could be done with a stick also, meaning that they do away with things like the small necessary school funding that they did in Ferndale, which they just got renewed. So that's not going to be an issue for Ferndale right now, I don't believe. But so they can either do it with a carrot and offer more money and incentivize it to go together, or with a stick and make it so these small school districts can't continue to exist. But there's no indication that either of those are happening anytime soon.
I was thinking with some of the remodeling that's going on, you know, if there's an opportunity to expand capacity in some of the larger footprint schools, kind of like Lafayette became the feeder for Franklin and for Worthington, or the school for that, if that was any movement in that direction, but it doesn't seem like that's the case.
Nope, I don't think so right now.
It's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Eureka Superintendent Fred Van Fleck. Talk Shop presented by Lolita Cheese Company, by CDH Painting, and by Redec. Fred, some of the different challenges that are out there, what do you see as the biggest one at this point for public ed, for Eureka City Schools? Take your pick.
Wow, there's lots of challenges out there. You know, one of the interesting ones that has just come up is this whole conversation of permitted grows and how permitted grows are allowed or not allowed to be around our schools and our bus stops. And right now, law is very clear about permitted grows have to be 1,000 feet away from a school because it's a drug-free zone. But that law is not there currently for bus stops. And so what's currently there for bus stops is 600 feet. And so here most recently, the conversation's been stirring because, shoot, you have a bus stop out there, and most of our bus stops are rural because the kids that live in town walk to school. And so as you get out in the rural areas, there's a lot of permitted grows that are starting or have been grown for years that are legalizing or whatever the case may be. And there's been a struggle for them to be permitted because they're within 600 feet of bus stops. And so what our county supervisors, my understanding, are now considering, because it's a county ordinance that puts that 600 feet there, is eliminating that around the bus stops. And
that wasn't it too late? If they've already permitted somebody and they're rocking and rolling with this stuff.
Well, right now it has to be 600 feet.
But if they're going to bump it to 1,000.
No, they're talking about taking it away.
Oh, just.
Right. Yep.
So to use a phrase, eradicating.
It. Yes. There you go. There you go. Yes. Yes.
Really?
And so that'll be really interesting. But here's the counter argument to that. I'm concerned about that. But the counter argument to that, and I get this, is, well, shoot. It's potentially the person that has a permitted grows child that's waiting there for the bus. And so they have to walk down the road 600 feet for the bus stop or whatever, or they have an illegal grow. And you know, it's interesting to think about that and to think about that's their neighborhood if there's a permitted grow in it as well. And parents have to talk to their children about that and how that works out within their own neighborhood politics and everything. And so I think this is an interesting interesting one for the supervisors to figure out what they're going to do with that.
So no, basically that topic hadn't been thought of during the initial setting up.
Well, I don't think it was thought of how much of an impact having a 600-foot buffer from bus stops was going to have on permitted grows out there. Especially when you get – for us, where it impacts us is in Elk River and up on Neyland. That's where our bus stops are that are near the permitted grows. When you get down into southern Humboldt, they're all over the place. So it just depends on how rural – your bus stops go out.
Yeah, I would think Northern Humboldt Unified would also be dealing with it, or Klamath Trinity also.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. You know, Northern Humboldt goes back into Maple Creek and back into that area as well, and all the way down in Redwood Valley. And
there's got to be plenty, you know, anytime you're into a rural setting.
Right.
You're going to run into that kind of stuff.
Right.
Are there a lot of those types of issues that are run into that are different with the rural setting than there are in the more developed areas or districts?
Well, there are, and what those are is if you're in an urban area, busing is much less expensive than if you're in a rural area, because we're sending buses to the top of Neyland every day. Whereas if you're in an urban area, your school attendance boundaries may only be a couple miles out. from each of your schools as opposed to where we go all the way out to Showers Pass.
So that's the high school running buses out that far?
That's correct. And we partner with Freshwater and we partner with Neyland as well. So we're not running multiple buses up there. So we work with them and work that out to try to streamline that. But still, it's a long ways to run a bus. And when you hit snow up there and different things like that, it's just a
different
world.
Chaining up a school bus would not be something I would ever want to experience.
Yes, yes, yes.
I presume they have to at certain times.
They do. But they actually have, I don't know if you've seen those automatic chainers. What they do is they got this little whirly bird. I'm sure everyone can see me spinning my finger, right?
Well, we all have those little caps that have got the little spinning beanie on.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, except upside down underneath the bus, and it flings a chain underneath the tires, so you don't actually have to get out. It's a push of a button to get the chains out.
It drives on the bus? Or rides on the bus?
And it rides underneath the bus, and then it spins it around, and it throws a chain underneath the tire.
And it locks automatically?
Yep. Basically, yep.
Oh, really? Yep. So it's almost just like shifting into eight-wheel drive, or whatever number of wheels they have?
Yeah, it's kind of like that, but it just does it on the drivers, on the back end of the bus, and throws a chain underneath there. But it's an interesting little invention that...
I hope somebody made a ton of money with that.
I would imagine.
That's so cool.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And they're probably being deployed on the east and the south right now.
Yep.
KINS, News and Information Time, 8:40.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:46. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck. Fred, how common are lawsuits that you guys have to deal with, whether it's employee-driven, parent-driven, neighborhood-driven, whatever? I mean, does that take a lot of time, effort, or money?
It takes a tremendous amount of time from the district. And there's a culture up here of lawsuits that's unlike anywhere else that I've been in California. I've been in education for well over 20 years. Been an administrator now for over 15 years. Six of those have been up here since I've been back up here. And the interesting thing that goes along with that is in the other districts that I was in, primarily in the Central Valley of California, lawsuits are just basically unheard of. They just didn't happen very often, if at all.
Issues weren't there, or they were addressed in a different fashion?
There's always controversy. I mean, there's always controversy when you're educating children, whether that be a special ed controversy, or if it's an employee controversy, or, somebody falls down and gets hurt controversy. There's all kinds of trip and fall things.
Right,
yeah. Right. Yeah. It just, for some reason, there wasn't a culture of, I'm going to sue the school district. And up here, there is that culture.
Deep pockets, you think? Is that it? People looking for the family treasure to be developed?
I would just be speculating, so I don't want to, really come to that conclusion. But what I can say is it takes a tremendous amount of time when the district does get sued from employees, because that's something that we really need to focus our time and energy on when that happens, as far as developing our case, going through the discovery, and whether we're right, wrong, or indifferent. It's time that has to be taken, and it's taken away from educating students. And I was talking to some superintendent friends of mine, some of which have retired, just asked them, how often did you get sued in your career? And most of them said, one or none. And that's just simply not the case up here. And
with the sexual harassment stuff that we're hearing all over the place, or, that kind of issue, you've got a bunch of kids that are, let's say, driven. And you've got a large number of staff. Are you taking measures to avoid some of the things that we're hearing about in the news?
Absolutely. One of the things, and this is actually required by law, that administrators get trained in sexual, it's always funny to say administrators get trained in sexual harassment. Well, they get trained in sexual harassment prevention, and that happens every other year. And then teachers, we actually have started doing an annual training of them just on some of the things to be thinking about with prevention of sexual harassment, and then also working and making sure that all of our board policies and administrative regulations are up to date with sexual harassment. And sexual harassment in a school district can occur in a multitude of ways, and the more common way for it to happen in school districts is employee to employee.
Not to the students.
No. You know, it's really, it's out there and it happens.
Or the coach, like we're right, hearing about right now.
But yeah, that's what makes the headline news. When there is a teacher or an administrator or a custodian or whatever having inappropriate relations with a student, that makes the news. When a teacher is having an inappropriate relationship with another teacher or assistant principal or whatever it is, that doesn't make the news as much because it's not as shocking or as illegal, obviously, or as inappropriate. It's inappropriate as a relationship with an adult and a student.
We'll stay out of the news.
Yes.
We'll see everybody tomorrow.